So good evening, everyone, and welcome to CKSL. My name's Glenn Svensson. I've been invited here to give a weekend on shamatha and vipassana practice. The schedule for the weekend will be that this evening I'll give an introduction into both of those practices. So in the first half of this evening's session, an introduction to the shamatha practice, have a short 10-minute break, and then the second half this evening, introduction into vipassana practice. And then Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow and Sunday, the same schedule will start at 10 o'clock till 4:30. There'll be four sessions, 1 hour lunch break from 1 till 2. Tomorrow's topic will be the shamatha practice. So we're going to be looking at, in detail, the shamatha practice, and in each of the sessions we'll be practicing various approaches to the shamatha practice as well. Plenty of time for you to get questions and about the practice as well, some feedback. And then also tomorrow, in the session after lunch, I'd like to bring in a little bit of the loving kindness compassion practice, because this is a very good balance to the shamatha practice and gives us a lot of energy and direction for our shamatha practice as well. Then on Sunday, again the same schedule as Saturday, we'll be focusing on the vipassana practice on the Sunday, and particularly in the last session on Sunday, we'll be looking at how to integrate both of these shamatha and vipassana practices into our daily life, so then we can really bring them into our daily life and they're not some sort of just abstract thing that we can't really use. So that's a little bit the schedule for the weekend. So before I begin, how many of you are familiar at some level with shamatha practice? It's a calm abiding, you know, single point of concentration. Anyone have any sort of vague understanding about that? Okay. And the vipassana practice, of course, is insight practice. So anyone have any idea about insight practice? Okay. So, this weekend I'm not going to assume that you have any real understanding, so I'll be starting from the ground up. And the reason we're covering these two practices is these are two of the main practices that you find in most forms of Buddhism. Within the, for example, within the Theravada schools of Buddhism, such as Sri Lankan Buddhism, Thai Buddhism, Burmese and so forth, we often talk about the three core practices of Sila, Samadhi, Panya, or ethics, concentration and wisdom. So there we have the shamatha vipassana. The shamatha is the concentration practice, the vipassana is the insight practice, the wisdom practice. And then of course also within the Mahayana traditions of Buddhism, such as Zen, Korean, Tibetan Buddhism, Vietnamese Buddhism, we often talk about then the six perfections practices as the core practices. The two last of those are concentration and wisdom, or again, shamatha vipassana. So in all of the forms of Buddhism, these two practices are really two of the really core, main core elements of practice. So let's start by having a brief introduction into the shamatha practice. What is shamatha? So, of course, shamatha is a Sanskrit word, and with this can be, this is translated then in through Tibetan Buddhism. In Tibetan, the word shamatha is translated as Shiva. And the Ta is translated as Nepa. This Shama or Shiva in English is usually translated as calm, meaning a non-discursive mind, a mind that's not jumping around everywhere. The Ta, or the Nepa in Tibetan, it means to abide, to remain.
So this is normally translated into English as abiding. So often the shamatha or shinne in Tibetan is translated into English as calm abiding. So this is a level of concentration that we're trying to develop in the spiritual path in Buddhism. So concentration in general in Sanskrit is samadhi, and we can develop many levels of samadhi, but the one that we're particularly interested in the Buddhist spiritual path is this level of samadhi called shamatha. And so that's what we're going to be looking at briefly this evening and then in more detail tomorrow. So why do we need this shamatha practice? In everyday life, of course, our faculty of attention, our ability to focus, is very important. Because if we can't focus in daily life due to dullness, agitation, or distraction, then we're not very effective in anything we do. We're not very effective at work, and then that also brings a lot of stress and agitation and tension. We also then end up with a lot of more mental imbalance. We end up with a lot more agitation, craving, anger, jealousy. There's a very famous quote from a great Indian master, Shantideva, who says that those with a distracted mind live in the jaws of the mental afflictions, meaning that if we have an agitated, distracted mind, we are much more predisposed to all sorts of mental afflictions, such as craving, jealousy, anger, and so forth. Also, of course, if we don't have good attention skills, then often we end up being the slaves of our mind. We're often dominated by our minds. We're overwhelmed often by our thoughts and emotions and memories, and they really create a lot of distress to us. Also, of course, because of this, we often end up with a lot of health problems, physical health problems. I think a lot of health problems are because of mental distress. And then also we end up with a lot of sleep problems as well. And also we then, as a result, we don't tend to really enjoy the simple pleasures in life as much as we could. So these are some of the difficulties we find if we don't have a level of attention skill in daily life. So by engaging in the shamatha practice, then even at the very much basic daily life level, then by developing a calm, clear, focused mind, then of course we're going to be much more effective in everything we do, much more effective at work, much more peaceful mind, much less stress, much less agitation, much less mental afflictions, less mental health problems, less physical problems, better sleep, and we'll enjoy simple pleasures in life much more. So even at a very basic level, this shamatha practice can bring us enormous benefits in our daily life. But of course here, the shamatha practice comes within the context of the Buddhist spiritual path. And so within the Buddhist spiritual path, the shamatha practice, enabling us to develop this very calm, clear, focused mind, this is really the basis of all other practices. Because if any of our practices are to really help us to transform our mind, then again, we also need this very calm, clear, focused mind for all of these other practices to be much more effective. So really the shamatha is the basis of not only vipassana practice, but it's the basis of loving kindness, compassion practice, all these other sorts of practices as well, because they enable us to really integrate these practices to transform our mind and to really overcome our suffering. But here, of course, in particular this weekend, we're going to be looking at the shamatha practice also as the basis of vipassana practice. Vipassana practice, insight practice, is to come to realize the nature of reality. And we are talking, of course, not about just understanding reality intellectually, because merely understanding reality intellectually is not really going to have much of a positive impact in our life. It's only when we can internalize that intellectual understanding, when we can come to taste and experience and realize the nature of reality, that it will really transform our perspective and our life. And so for that to happen, we need a very stable, clear, focused mind, this mind of shamatha. So this is why we need to engage in the shamatha practice. How to train in it. Oh, by the way, while I'm talking, if there's something that I'm explaining that you're not sure about or you don't understand, then please ask questions. I really encourage to be interactive. So if you have some doubt about what I'm saying, then just raise your hand and then I'll try and clarify your question. Because if you have a doubt, maybe someone else has and that will help them as well. Okay? So how to practice. Now, often when you, people who are into some sort of spiritual practice, we often hear people discussing amongst themselves. They say, oh, when do you do your practice? And the other person says, oh, I do that every morning at 6:30 for an hour. If this is our idea of spiritual practice, I think we're not going to get very far. Because actually spiritual practice has two parts. There is the actual formal meditation practice and then what we do for the rest of our daily life. Because if we only put effort into a little bit of meditation every morning, but then the rest of the day we run around like we normally do, then what little benefit we receive in the morning meditation practice will get squashed by our mindless running around stressful daily life. So if we want any practice to be effective and to progress, we need both. We need a formal meditation practice to internalize, and then we need to integrate it into daily life. We need to continue to cultivate that practice throughout the day. If we do both of these two things, then we can be most effective in that practice. And so we're going to not only look at the meditation practice of shamatha, but also, in particular, on Sunday afternoon, we're going to look at how we can integrate that into daily life so we can really make it as most effective practice. Now, within the meditation practice, then we have preparation, what we do at the beginning of the meditation, and then the actual meditation. Often people, when they meditate, they just flop down and they just jump straight into the meditation without preparing their body and mind. This is not going to be very helpful, not going to be very effective. So within preparation here, of course, we're talking about preparing the body and preparing the mind. So preparing the body, of course, involves having a good posture. And I'll talk a little bit more about the posture in the first session tomorrow morning. But just a couple of things to mention briefly now with posture. So often, particularly in Tibetan Buddhism, when they talk about the posture in meditation, they have a very elaborate 7 points to look at. Within that, of course, two main things to consider in good posture. One is to have the back nice and straight. The second is to have the body completely relaxed. Because we want to get into a very stable, conducive posture and relaxed body so we can sort of forget about the body, that it's not going to create any interferences. With the posture, then, one of the things that often people find most difficult is what to do with the legs. and then end up having a lot of pain in the knees, lower back, and so forth. So, of course, they talk about the full lotus posture, but many of us can't really do that, you know, having both feet up on the thighs. That's very stable. But simply we can, if we can just use something like this, a crossed leg posture. What's very good with that is to have three points of contact. If we're sitting here like this, then we're sort of very unstable, and often that puts a lot of strain on the lower back. So make sure you're sitting on enough cushions so that the knees are at least level with the hips, but ideally touching, so we have three points of contact. Some people find they got knee problems, they can't sit like this. Then there's meditation stools where you can tuck your feet under your legs underneath. Some people find that difficult. Sit on a chair, that's okay as well. Some people maybe even have back problems and can't really even sit on a chair very well. Then we can use the what's called in yoga the Shavasana, the corpse posture, lying flat on our back, hands to the side. So this is also acceptable posture for meditation. Again, body relaxed, back straight. These are the two main elements of the posture. With the hands, in the Tibetan tradition, the sort of the one that's normally taught is to have the right hand resting in the left, thumbs gently touching, resting in the lap like this. That's the Tibetan tradition. If you find that uncomfortable, then you can just have your hands on your knees. That's fine as well. So that's not so important. Again, the two main things is really just to have the back nice and straight and to have the body nice and relaxed in a nice, stable posture. But I'm going to speak a little bit more about the posture tomorrow morning in the first meditation. Is there any brief questions on that before I move on about the posture? That's one of the things I'm going to talk about tomorrow morning. Just a brief answer now, though. In general, for the eyes, it's recommended to have them slightly open, because if we have them closed, usually for us that's a sign to go to sleep, so we sort of become half asleep in our meditation. And if we have them too open, often too much light, we get quite agitated. So the recommended is to have them slightly open, but that's something we can experiment with as a beginner. If we're the sort of person that easily gets very sleepy, I wouldn't recommend having them closed. If we're the sort of person that's really highly agitated, maybe even having them slightly open is a bit too agitating, then as a beginner maybe you can lightly close them. So that's something you can experiment with a little bit. But the general recommendation, have them slightly open, let a little bit of light in to overcome the dullness. And we're going to talk more about the what to do with the eyes tomorrow morning, because there's one particular shamatha practice that we're going to be talking about tomorrow that really does recommend to have them open. And I'll speak more about that tomorrow. Okay. And then, of course, part of the preparation here is to prepare the mind as well, to have the mind nice and relaxed in the present moment with a good motivation. But again, I'll talk more about that tomorrow morning. So it's important that we prepare the body and the mind, beginning the meditation, and then we go into the actual meditation practice. Now here, of course, the actual meditation practice, we're talking about the shamatha practice. So there are a number of things that we're going to look at here in the practice. The first is what are we doing in this practice? What qualities are we trying to develop in this shamatha practice? And here, generally within shamatha practice, it's said there are two qualities that we're trying to cultivate or develop. The first is stability. So remember, shamatha, calm abiding. So abiding means to be focused on a single object without becoming distracted. So we are trying to develop a stable mind, a mind where we're able to focus on an object without distraction.
So this is the first quality we're trying to develop. But not only are we trying to be able to focus on an object in a stable way without becoming distracted, we also want to be able to focus on that object clearly. So that's the second quality. Is clarity. So we want a stable mind and a clear mind. So normally in the meditation text it says, shamatha practice, these are the two qualities we are trying to develop. Now, what is stopping us from developing these qualities? What are the faults? Of course, what's stopping us having a stable mind is our mind being distracted, distraction. And what is stopping us from having a clear focus is when our mind is very dull, dullness. But actually, in the shamatha practice, I like to add a third quality that we really should pay attention to. And it's one that's not mentioned so much in the meditation texts. Because I think these old meditation texts, this quality was sort of there in a normal person and it didn't really need to be emphasized. But in our modern day society, I think it's something that we really need to pay attention to. And that is the quality of relaxation. Because when we come into this practice, in fact in any practice, our background, we tend to be very agitated, stressed, we have a lot of tension, and our minds tends to be quite chaotic. And actually in our daily life now, if we want to focus on something, then because our minds are so chaotic, we tend to have use a lot of tension to focus, to avoid getting distracted. And if we only have to focus a short time, that can sort of work. But we all know from our own experience, if we have to focus on something for a longer period with a lot of tension, then our minds often become very agitated and we become completely exhausted. So this is not the sort of approach we want in the shamatha practice. So what we need to do, the first thing we need to do is we need to learn to relax. In fact, this is probably the thing that creates most problems for beginners in meditation, is that we come into meditation from this background, a lot of agitation, a lot of tension in our life. And so when we sit down to meditate, particularly in shamatha practice where we're trying to focus on a single object, then we really clamp down forcibly. And then when we get distracted, we think, oh, I just need to clamp down harder. I need to try harder. So we keep going harder and harder and harder, and then people complain about getting headaches from meditating and get completely exhausted. So this is not the approach we want to use in this practice. So the first thing we need to do in this practice is we need to learn how to relax. We need relaxation as the basis of the practice. With a relaxed mind, then we can work on stabilizing our attention. Then we can work on improving the clarity of our focus. So this is the order that we need to develop these qualities. So this is something very important that I can't stress enough, that in the shamatha practice as a beginner, the thing we first need to really learn how to do is learn how to relax. Because if we can't do that, we're really not going to be able to develop these qualities in any sustainable way. So relax, 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 relax is very important. So these are the qualities we're trying to develop in the practice. And these are the faults that we're trying to overcome. Then, of course, the next question is then, what object to use in this practice. Because here we're just trying to develop single point of concentration, focusing on a given object. But what object to focus on? And in this practice, there are many possibilities. And in general, it's recommended use the object that works best for you. Within that, probably the object that is most emphasized in most Buddhist traditions is the breath, is to focus on the sensations associated with the breathing. And often in the meditation text it says, if you're the sort of person who's highly discursive, always thinking, 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 then definitely the best object for you is the breath. So I think that accounts for about 95% of the modern day world, is that we're all living in the head. We're always constantly thinking, thinking, thinking. So much so that we've lost touch with our body and the physical world. So by focusing on the physical sensations of the breath, that gets us out of our conceptual mind and into the body. So that's a good start. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. Very rarely are we in the present moment. And according to Buddhism, and also some modern studies are showing this as well, if we live in the past and the future, this is a source for unhappiness, that we really need to be focused in the present moment. And so, of course, the physical sensations of the breath only happen in the present moment. So by focusing on them, not only do we get out of our conceptual mind into the body, but we get out of the past and the future into the present moment. Therefore, the breath is highly recommended. And probably for most of us, as a beginner in the shamatha practice, that's probably where we're going to begin. And within the breath practice, there are some variations. There is what's called the full body breath practice. And that is where we are simply noticing sensations anywhere within the body related to the breath. So anywhere you can notice sensations associated with the breath, in the abdomen, chest, around here, anywhere. So in that practice, we have a very diffuse object. And this variation of breath practice is very good for working with relaxation. So if we really want to work with relaxation, then just notice sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breath. And this is particularly good to use with the shavasana, the corpse posture, lying flat down on a nice comfortable cushion or on the bed at home, and just emphasizing relaxation, relaxing, relaxing, relaxing. So this is particularly good for working with relaxation. Then another variation of this practice is to focus on the sensations of breath in the area of the abdomen. This is emphasized in a number of particularly Theravada traditions, the rising and lowering of the abdomen. So this area here, quite large, quite easy to focus on. Therefore, because of that, this abdomen practice is quite good for helping us to stabilize the mind, to stop getting distracted. Then a third variation of the breath practice is to focus at the entrance of the nostrils. Now, of course, that's a much smaller area of focus, much more difficult to focus on, but because it's a much more subtle object, it really does help us to improve clarity, make the mind more clear. So here, there, we have three variations of the breath practice, which are very good for working with those three qualities. So for many of us, the breath is probably going to be the best object, certainly as a beginning level of the practice. There are a number of other objects that are recommended. Those of you who have done some study with in the Tibetan tradition, particularly in the Lam Rim. When you come to the shamatha practice, there you find, of course, often it's really emphasized to use a mental image of a Buddha as the object. And there are many benefits for doing that, particularly as a basis for then tantric practice. But many of us who've done that find it very difficult, because many of us are not so familiar with what a Buddha looks like, and it's quite a complex visualization. And many of us find it difficult to visualize clearly. So many of us really even struggle with that practice. But some people find it really resonates and very helpful. There are two other objects that I want to mention here, which are emphasized in certain traditions, which I find are very beneficial for us, particularly in our modern society. The second object is to focus on the mind itself. This is emphasized in a number of Buddhist traditions, particularly in those Buddhist traditions that talk about the nature of the mind practice. Now, with this practice, the object is simply our own mind and whatever mental events are arising in our mind, whatever thoughts and emotions are coming up in the mind. Now, I think many people who try this practice find it more challenging than the breath, because it's not a physical object, but there are enormous benefits with this, using this object. Because again, unfortunately, many of us in our modern society are the slaves of our mind. We are dominated by the things that are going on in our mind, where all these thoughts and emotions and memories just swirling around in our mind all the time, and often they overwhelm us. If a thought or emotion comes up, we identify with it, we follow it, we get caught up in our stories, and we get overwhelmed by them. And of course, also what happens is that often if some negative mental event arises in our mind and we don't know how to deal with it, what do? Stuff it back down. We try and suppress it. Of course, suppressing it is not helpful, because by suppressing them, they don't go away. That just builds up like a pressure cooker. And often by suppressing these negative mental events, they manifest as physical illness. And often then we project a lot of this negativity onto the people around us. So whether we get caught up and follow our thoughts and emotions or we try and suppress them, they overwhelm us. We are really slaves of our mind. Whereas with this practice here, shamatha practice observing the mind, we are simply observing the mind. We are learning to be the impartial observer or witness of our mind. We're simply observing the mind and whatever is arising and passing. And so every time we manage to simply observe a thought or emotion or memory as it arises and passes, we don't get overwhelmed by it. Because every time we identify with some mental event and we follow it, we feed it. The habit of it will get stronger and stronger. Every time we try to suppress it, we're feeding it. So no wonder we continually have more and more garbage coming up in our mind, because we can keep feeding it by following it or trying to suppress it. Whereas here, we are simply observing it, meaning arising and passing. And if we can do that, we're not feeding it, which means the habit of this stuff coming up will get weaker. Our mind will naturally become more quiet and still. And instead of being the slaves of our mind, we will become the masters of our mind. Not only will we be able to develop a calm, clear, quiet mind, but then if some strong mental event were to arise in our mind, we could simply be present with it without it overwhelming us. So with this practice, that's the enormous side benefit. We really will become the masters of our mind. Then there is a third object, which often is called shamatha with no object, or sometimes it's called awareness of awareness. Everything
And this, I think, also can be very beneficial practice, particularly in our modern society. Because in this practice, we are simply resting in the mind itself. In the second practice, we are observing our mind. So we have a sense of being the witness, looking at the mind and whatever's arising. Whereas in the third practice, it's not so much about looking at the mind, it's just resting in awareness, being the mind. And so within this practice, we are simply resting in that raw awareness itself. And we're not interested in any appearances there. They'll come and they'll go, but we're not looking at them like we did here. So this practice, what it does is it enables us to really rest in this vast, open, spacious awareness of our mind. So normally when an appearance arises in our mind, we contract around it. So our mind seems to become very small and tight and agitated. Whereas in this practice, it becomes very open and spacious, and therefore we can be in this very quiet, open space at the same time as all appearances arising and not getting caught up in the appearances. So also this is very good for a bridge into the Vipassana practice, because simply by resting in awareness itself, we start to intuit what is the underlying nature of our mind, which is the Vipassana practice. So this is a very good bridge into the Vipassana practice. So these are the three objects that I want to focus on in tomorrow's shamatha sessions. First session, the breath. Second session, the mind. After lunch, I want to go into the loving kindness, compassion as a balance. And then the last session tomorrow afternoon, the awareness of awareness practice. So we'll be looking at what they are, how to practice them. We'll be doing lots of meditation and then time for question, answer, feedback as well. Okay. Any questions about anything so far? Yeah.
In the last point that you raised about the awareness of awareness, the witness to my hand, I'm able to comprehend.
Which point in particular?
The last point.
Yeah. What do you mean? Okay, yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about this more tomorrow, but as an analogy, sometimes this practice, the analogy given is that the sky is the mind and that all the thoughts and emotions are like clouds moving through the sky. So in this one, we are looking at the sky and watching the clouds move through. This one is be the sky. Don't look at it, just be the sky. This people find difficult because we always want to do something, you know. We want to do something. What is the thing that I'm looking at? Here, it's not so much about doing or looking, it's about being. That's why people find it very difficult. Experientially, these practices are quite dualistic. There's a sense of me, the meditator, observing some object. This is not, experientially, is not really dualistic. That's why people find it difficult, because we live in a dualistic world, and so to rest in this sort of non-dualistic space, people go, well, what am I supposed to be looking at? And so then we've missed the point. It's a bit like, you know, a fish looking for water. You know, where is this water stuff? You know, because it's everywhere. So, but I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow, how to sort of start to get into that practice. It is more subtle and people find it quite difficult, mainly for this reason. But again, I'll talk more about that tomorrow afternoon. Yeah.
What about mindfulness meditation? I mean, what people normally talk about is mindfulness meditation.
Okay. That was one of the things I was going to come up to next. In fact, let's go there. So then the third point is then, what tools do we use in this practice? And the two tools that we use
are called mindfulness and introspection. This mindfulness often these days is quite confusing, because how the word mindfulness now is used in a lot of modern day traditions has changed somewhat as it was used in Buddhism early. The word mindfulness in Sanskrit is smriti, in Pali sati. And those words literally mean to remember, to remember. So mindfulness in the Buddhist context is the ability to remember the object. Simply the ability to be able to remember or focus on the object without becoming distracted. This is what mindfulness is here, is the ability to focus on an object without becoming distracted. The Sanskrit is smriti, S-M-R-T-I, and in Pali, sati, sati. S-M-R-T-I, I mean, this is how in English it's sort of written. And they literally mean to remember. So mindfulness is to be able to remember the object, to not forget it. So it simply means to be able to hold the object without becoming distracted. But of course, then we need a way of monitoring that. Are we still holding it? That's introspection. So introspection is like quality control. Introspection is like checking. How is my mindfulness going? Am I still focused on the object, or am I becoming distracted or dull? So introspection is to notice when we have some dullness or distraction, and then if we do, then reapply mindfulness, refocus on the object. In fact, here we have a nice little quote from a great Indian master, Asanga, from the 4th century. He says, mindfulness and introspection are taught, for the first prevents the attention from straying, that's mindfulness, by holding it, from the meditation object, while the second recognizes that the attention is straying. So these are the two tools we use in this practice. And as we're going to see tomorrow, often the analogy here is that the mindfulness is like a rope, the rope of mindfulness. We tie our mind with the rope of mindfulness to the object. And introspection is like a hook to hook us back when we notice that we've become distracted. But I'm going to speak more about that. Now, the difficulty here is in a lot of modern day traditions, this mindfulness has been redefined. And often you find in a lot of modern day traditions, mindfulness is often defined as something like this non-judgmental awareness of whatever is arising in the present moment. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, that's a great thing to do. But that's not how mindfulness was defined in the original Buddhist texts. So we need to be aware of that. Otherwise, it could be a lot of confusion. So then here, our main tool we're using to develop this concentration is mindfulness. And so sometimes this, when we're using the breath as the object, is simply called mindfulness of breathing. That's okay to call it that. Does that answer your question? Okay. So that's the tools we use. Then, what else did I want to mention? Anything so far on that? Any other questions? Yeah.
Would it not be correct to say that one definition of mindfulness that you just talked about actually just using a terminology for the object of mind that you talked about in the previous
session? Yeah. I mean, that modern definition is, from a Buddhist perspective, I think is more like applying mindfulness in daily life. Because here, you know, we said practice. So in the meditation practice here, we are simply using mindfulness to hold the object. And then in daily life, what we're trying to do is we're trying to strengthen this mindfulness in daily life as well. So that would mean some things is to really be present with whatever we are doing in our daily life. So there we are applying our mindfulness and strengthening it in our daily life as well. That's all.
It used to be in Sanskrit, the word smriti deals with memory.
Yeah, that's right, memory, to remember. That's right, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly the meaning here, is to remember the object. So we, to remember the object, to not forget it. Exactly. Yes. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah.
Balance between relaxation and clarity.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, is that kind of fine balancing act? Because on one hand, when you relax, tend to become dull, and that's an indication that you are relaxed. And on the other hand, you're trying to attain clarity. So how do you actually...
Exactly. This is one of the big challenges of shamatha practitioners. And to find this balance is very difficult. That's the great challenge. Even great meditation masters say, you know, if I apply things, I get agitated. If I relax, I become dull. What am I to do? Even great meditators say this. And this is something we're going to see tomorrow, when we look at the various stages of development of the shamatha, even at quite advanced levels, there's still this challenge. We're still trying to fine-tune it. In fact, the example, or the analogy often given in the texts, it's like a guitar string. You know, if a guitar string is too tight or too loose, it doesn't play well. So we're having to continually retune it finer and finer and finer to find that perfect balance. And this is something we have to learn from our own experience. It is a challenge, but that's the challenge. And if we can do that, then if we can find that right balance, then we can really progress in the practice. And that's, again, unfortunately, this is something that's not really much emphasized, because I think in ancient India and ancient Tibet, people were quite chilled and relaxed. In fact, often they were too relaxed. So often one of the first instructions you'll see in shamatha practice in those old manuals, the first instruction is firmly tighten your focus on the object, because they were just too relaxed. But of course, our modern day, we see that. We go, oh, okay, I know what to do. And we just clamp down like tight, much tighter than we do. And then we do that. And for a short time, maybe we get a little bit of this. And we go, oh, wow, I can do this. But then we keep going, and then we get agitated. We get exhausted. We get headaches. And we think, no, this is not working. And it's because we don't have the basis of relaxation. So this, I mean, I know from my own experience and talking to many people, if we don't really work on this as a foundation, we're going to have all sorts of problems. In fact, I would suggest many people in the beginning phase of meditation practice, not just shamatha practice in general, many of the problems we have is because of this. We're just too tight, we're too tense, we're just trying too hard. It doesn't work. And that's, unfortunately, the approach we use in our daily life. That's what we've learned from this high, that to focus on something, we tense. And if we do that for a short time, it can sort of work. But here, we're trying to develop, you know, stability and clarity a longer term. It won't work. We need to really learn to relax as the basis, really. I know from my own experience and talking to many people. Mantra? Yeah. In a beginning phase, sometimes they even say if your mind is very agitated, find a stick or a pebble, put it down and just look at it. You know? So I think in the beginning phase, we can use such objects, even visual objects, to start to settle the mind down. And I think even things like mantras and so forth can work in the beginning phase. But I think what you're going to find, particularly like visual object or an object that is a repetition of something, that can only really take us so far, because it's too dynamic. We need something more static. So yes, in the beginning phase, and certainly in daily life, then that can really be helpful in maintaining focus. But I think if we want the higher levels of the shamatha practice, I think it may prove difficult to do, certainly if you're verbalizing. I mean, once we get just past a certain point in the shamatha, the object has to be a mental object, because our sense faculties really start to sort of shut down. So even if we begin with the sensations of the breath or visual object, at some point we're going to have to move to a mental object to continue. But at the beginning phase, to just to settle down, I think we can use these sorts of objects.
What's the difference between deep sleep and meditation?
Deep sleep and meditation? In deep sleep, there's none of this. Yeah, and not much of this. No? Some people, of course, one of the practices that we can do is to develop lucid sleep. In lucid sleep, there's this. In normal sleep, there's none of this. I mean, if there's this in sleep, you're aware that you're asleep. I mean, normally we're not aware we're asleep. Normally we're not aware we're dreaming. We think in the dream it's real. We don't realize we're dreaming. But if we really, in fact, that's one of the things that can happen in shamatha practice. As we develop our mindfulness, we can start to more easily develop lucid dreaming and even lucid sleep, because our mindfulness is getting more sharpened. So this is a different, and also, this is, of course, I mean, we got a lot of this in sleep, I think. But if we develop lucid sleep, then we can, with mindfulness, improve that, of course. I mean, of course, with sleep, we relax, but we're not really developing these qualities. Okay. One or two things, and then we'll have a short break. Okay. So then there is... We're going to look at tomorrow as well. We're going to look at what faults to overcome in this practice. And the two main faults, as we've just mentioned before here, is this dullness and distraction. Often you find in the meditation texts, distraction is listed as excitement. Because the most common form of distraction in meditation is we get pulled away by the so-called sense pleasure, something nice. This is why it's often called excitement. And the technical word for dullness in the meditation text often is laxity. So often these are the two main faults we're trying to overcome, laxity and excitement. But there's some other faults we need to be aware of and overcome. We're going to look at that tomorrow during the course of the day in our shamatha practice. And then the last thing we're going to look at tomorrow, the stages of development. What stages do we move through in our shamatha practice? How can we know that we're actually making progress in shamatha practice? And they're very clearly well-defined stages that we go through. So we'll have a brief look at those tomorrow afternoon as well. So I think that's about all I wanted to mention in terms of the shamatha practice as an introduction. One last point, and then we will take a break. Practice, as I said, in general, in any practice, we need a formal meditation practice to internalize, and then we need to integrate it into daily life. But particularly here in shamatha practice as well, it's very important to have a conducive, supportive lifestyle in general. Now, of course, we talked a bit about mindfulness. Mindfulness now is sort of one of the in things in our modern society, you know. It's a sort of top topics to talk about these days, mindfulness, which is a good thing. But unfortunately, of course, this sometimes mindfulness in a lot of the modern day systems they've stripped away everything else, particularly ethics, throw that out the window because that's religious stuff, so we don't want that. And then they end up with this sort of very bare mindfulness. And then this mindfulness just becomes like a sort of a little bit of a band-aid to try and soothe our agitated, disturbed mind, and it doesn't really bring a lot of benefit. Because as long as we continue to engage in a dysfunctional lifestyle, then any little mindfulness practice we do is not going to bring a lot of benefit, a little bit. So what we need to do, of course, is to make sure that we have a conducive, supportive lifestyle, and that this meditation practice is within a framework, some sort of framework, where it's really going to bring us a lot of benefit in our life. And so that's something that I'm going to talk more about on that last session on Sunday, with both the shamatha practice, the vipassana practice, how to not only work with them in daily life, but how to really structure our life in such a way to make it conducive so that these sorts of practices can give us the most benefit possible. So that's some of the points I'm going to look at last session on Sunday. On that note, I think it's time for a short break. So let's take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and I'll give a short introduction into the vipassana practice.